You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Chris Nichols. California faces an ongoing housing affordability crisis. This is a topic we've talked about numerous times here on Insight. But come November, Californians will vote on two ballot measures that are looking to address these issues through actions like bond borrowing thresholds and rent control. These two measures are Prop 5 and Prop 33. Sacramento State Public Policy Professor Robert Wasmer spoke with CAP Radio Politics reporter Megan Myskowski about the impact these measures could have on housing affordability and some of the challenges they might face.
Thanks for joining us on Insight, Rob.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So let's start by talking about the broader picture of housing in California. How did this housing situation, specifically here in California, get so dire?
Well, I think that's a good characterization of the housing situation. It is rather dire in terms of both how much individuals in California pay in rent and how much they pay to buy a new home. It is the highest in the United States, almost by a magnitude of two. So it is something that we should be concerned about. There's a grassroots concern about it, and it's right to think about policy interventions to do something about it.
Sure. And what obstacles are there right now to keep us from, you know, fixing it or making it better?
There are a lot of special interests who kind of have a interest in housing, not to mention, you know, even to begin with, current homeowners. Right. In California, you really have to stretch to buy a home. You're very concerned about your property values and how it's going to change. You know, Californians rely upon it to take out second mortgages to pay for their kids' housing, for retirement, all sorts of different things. So that is one thing. There's somewhat of a resistance in communities to build new housing, because when you build new housing in a community that you've built, moved into, it can do nothing but lower the price of your home or keep it constant, right? It's a supply and demand type of issue. So building more. So that's a concern. People are also concerned about the character of their neighborhood, but, you know, about changing it. They moved into this neighborhood, you're going to build especially affordable housing or bring different type of people into my community. That is a concern. But there's also, you know, developers who are building. There are real estate agents. There are local governments who have some interest, not always in building new affordable housing. So it's a very complicated situation.
Right? And when you talk about character of the neighborhood, that could even just mean, you know, multifamily housing, mm-hmm. right? Introducing that into single family housing neighborhoods.
Yeah. I mean, you bought into this neighborhood and you bought into it like it was. And what could be attractive is building more expensive homes, attracting higher socioeconomic people to my neighborhood. You know, that could be attractive in some sense. But oftentimes, that's not even attractive. We talk about gentrification. Some neighborhoods, you know, don't want to have even more housing built, more high-income housing, because even the character of the neighborhood changes at that level. So there is resistance to do it. You know, that is a big issue. So politicians, rightfully so, are looking for solutions, including the legislature and the governor. And, you know, these two recent propositions are ways of thinking about it and doing something about it.
You look at policy quite a bit. What do you think effective policy ideally looks like? What are we looking for here?
I think we have to understand that we largely live in a capitalist society, you know, that housing is produced in private markets. We rely upon private developers who are looking for a rate of return, a profit in doing this. And, you know, a plurality, if not a majority of housing in California, new housing is built by developers who have options to go to other states. So if they can't get the return on housing, you know, they're going to go someplace else. So we need to always keep that in mind when we're trying to do something. And we have local governments who have a lot of control and like to preserve their own sovereignty in making these type of land use decisions, you know, that works. So we have to work within those constraints and work in policy that's going to keep in mind that the ability to make a profit and this ability of local control and not stepping too hard on saying you have to build this housing. So I think those are the policy constraints that we face, especially in the housing arena.
Yeah. So talking about policy, there's two propositions on the ballot this November that we're here to talk about that are meant to help with this. That's Prop 5 and Prop 33. And I want to start with Prop 5. Who's for it and who's against it?
Well, Prop 5 is, maybe I should start with just giving a general explanation of it. You know, it's the idea that we want to have local governments have the ability to offer bonds, right? These are general obligation bonds, which have the full faith and credit of the local government that are going to be paid for largely in local property tax revenue. So that now requires a two-thirds majority to put in place. That bond is talking about lowering it to 55%. So it's going to make it easier for these bonds to be passed. And the reason why they want these bonds to pass, as I was just talking about, is that to make up the difference, you know, private developers don't see that they can make a profit or a great enough rate of return. So if we can lower the cost to developers, give them a greater rate of return through these public dollars, hopefully we'll get more affordable housing built.
Got it. And yeah, just go back to that question. Who is really backing this bill and who is speaking out against it, putting money into campaigns against it?
Well, I think all Californians will look at this bill and say, okay, that makes a lot of sense. Developers will not be able to do this. Let's help them out. And it does make sense in that, right? In doing that. It's one solution to do this. You know, and it relies upon the market, you know, in subsidizing, but it's drawing these public dollars away that could be spent on other things. And after Prop 13, we don't have a lot of flexibility in raising property taxes. It's a pretty inelastic revenue instrument. So if you're going to commit these dollars to this affordable housing in this long-term bond that has to be paid back, you know, that's 10, 20, 30 years into the future.
And just to take it a step back, could you explain Prop 13 for listeners who might not be familiar?
Oh, sure. You know, Prop 13 was passed back in 1979 and restricts local property taxes to 1% of the acquisition value, which means, you know, the value when you buy it, then it's only allowed to go up 2% after that. So it's a really restrained instrument in that we can only tax our property at 1% of this value that isn't the market value, but it's the value that you bought that's only allowed to increase 2% a year. And, you know, that's a rather restrictive tool that we have, and local governments don't have many other tools. One of their other tools is development fees. You know, you want to build a new house? Okay, we're going to charge you a development fee for doing that, but that's what raises the price of housing also. Sometimes this is called the fiscalization of land use, right? That, you know, local governments don't think about what do our citizens need? What could be best for our citizens? What's the bottom line? How much revenue is this new property going to bring as compared to how much it's going to cost to us to provide its services? And affordable housing, you know, $400,000 homes or less, you know, at that 1% only bring $4,000 or less after the money is shared with the county. So it's not a big payoff to build this affordable housing from a pure bottom line perspective. So, yeah, Prop 13 has put us in this quandary in regard to it's part of the reasons why we have these affordable housing issues.
Sure. So going back to Prop 5, how effective do you see this being and what might hold it back from being effective policy if it is held back?
I mean, I think it could be quite effective. That's what its advocates talk about. There are many of these bonds that have been put in place that would require a two-thirds majority that don't get to the two-thirds majority. Now we're only talking about a 55% majority. And we've put that in place for school maintenance and reconstruction, and it's been quite effective. So the question is, should we also be doing it for affordable housing? And they've lumped it with public infrastructure to make it more attractive also. But, you know, with affordable housing, there will be more money available to developers, you know, to raise their profitability. But the question is, do local voters have the foresight, have the knowledge to be passing these bonds that may be 10, 20, 30 years ago, 30 years that they're going to have to pay it back. You know, residents who aren't even there are going to be paying this back. So that is a concern.
Yeah. And looking down the pike that way, you know, what could happen that would make this difficult to pay it back? What do we have to be kind of looking ahead to the future for to make those decisions?
I think we can look at the revenue crunch, the budget crunch at the state level and the local level, even here in Sacramento, where Mayor Steinberg, the council, had some very difficult decisions that they had to cut things. And, you know, they wouldn't be able to cut the paying back of these bonds, right? You'd cut back on provisions to children or elderly or parks and recs or maintenance, right? And that's the concern. There's an opportunity cost. It sounds great to pass these bonds to help people right now who need this housing in our community, but we're going to be paying it back over a very long time. And, you know, we're going to have to give up other things That's a major concern in my regard. It's not so much the 55%, but local governments and their revenue constraints, that they don't have a lot of revenue. And if we're going to do this, we're going to be giving up other things. I think Californians just have to realize that.
Sure. And this isn't the first time that lawmakers have floated this idea. So what has held this back in the past? And how do you see that playing out in this conversation this year?
Well, the housing affordability situation has gotten worse, right? And you know, there has been, as of right, zoning, lessening of CEQA, California environmental quality restrictions, which prevent some of the building gone forward. So they're looking for new ways of doing this. And this seems like one way that doesn't appear, you know, all that costless, right? But it's just like when you buy a home, you know, when you look at your mortgage and how much it actually costs to buy a home, you know, there's a huge amount of interest that are going to be being paid for it, right, over when these bonds are issued. And right now, interest rates are quite high, right? If you issue these bonds right now, you're paying 7% interest on these bonds. So it becomes quite costly to pay these back. So I would think about looking for a guaranteed revenue source that would make this more attractive.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Sac State Professor Robert Wassmer about two housing-related measures that will be on the ballot this November. So let's move on to Prop 33, which would open the door for more rent control measures in the state. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, Prop 33, as you say, deals with rent control, which always seems quite attractive from a grassroots perspective. You know, you have these greedy developers, these greedy capitalists, these people who are, you know, in the landed aristocracy class who own this land, and they're taking advantage of renters. So why don't we just, you know, they don't need to raise the rent 15-20% every year. Let's put a cap on it, on the amount that they can raise it. And there's something to be said about that, clearly, right? And in 2019, California and Oregon were the first states to pass statewide rent control, which all landlords are required that they can only raise their rent by 10%, 5% plus the inflation rate. So, you know, with our inflation rate now being above 5%, 10% is the maximum that it can be raised. So we already have rent control, but we had a previous legislation that put some restrictions on that rent control. And this Prop 33 is wanting to cut back those restrictions and make it even a more binding, aggressive form of rent control.
So since we're cutting back restrictions, that means that we're really kind of opening it up for cities and counties to set those rent controls themselves now, or opening up what they can do. Is that right?
Well, you have to go back to this legislation, 1995, called Costa-Hawkins, when, you know, in 1995, there was a lot of public support for rent controls, and local governments were getting pretty aggressive in putting in rent controls. And the legislature said that's not in the best interest of California to have all these rent controls, because it kind of does stifle development, right? You don't want to come in and as a developer and build housing if you're going to be restricted in what you can raise it. So in the interest of the state, they put in these restrictions. And these restrictions are pretty constant in other states in regard to rent control. So we can talk about each of those restrictions.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing is the rent control that we currently have, when a tenant moves out of an apartment, then the landlord can raise the rent to whatever the market will bear. Right. I mean, they can't raise it infinitesimally because they're looking for a tenant.
Yeah.
Right. But sometimes you see houses or apartments vacant for like 6 months or so because the landlord's waiting. Right. And that kind of upsets people. So this is called vacancy decontrol. That would be eliminated under Prop 33. Apartments would be under rent control. Even if you leave, the next tenant would get the rent that you had. That's very concerning to landlords and developers that that is the case. Currently, rent control does not apply to single family homes, you know, that a single family home that's owned by a mom and pop or, you know, own five or six homes, pool their retirement income together. Real estate agents often buy homes and rent them. There is no rent control under that. Right. Only single family homes that are corporate, right, that a corporate entity owns are subject to rent control. But that isn't many in California. Prop 33 would remove that. Right. And all homes would be rent control. So whether, you know, if you just bought a home with an inheritance or something and you're renting it out, right, that would now be subject to rent control as an individual. And then the third thing, an important thing that was put in Costa-Hawkins, is rent control only applies to buildings that are over 15 years old. And you may ask why that's the case. Well, it's to encourage developers to come to California. I can build in California, and I can guarantee that I can charge whatever rent I want for the first 15 years. Now you're going to say, I'm going to build, and I can charge the rent for the first time that I build it. But after that, it's always going to be under rent control. And I think we have to understand that most of the housing built in California are built by developers who build all across the United States. So, you know, we're making it less attractive to build in California by this Prop 33. So, you know, that is a concern. I'm an economist that, you know, that people are a bit concerned about removing that price signal, capping this rent. Our problem is we don't have enough housing. Right. And what's going to happen here is that this is even going to encourage less housing to be built. So it's a short term solution, but it may have some long term consequences.
I think that's a really good segue into talking about who is backing this, who's for this and who's against it.
Well, there's a group called Yes in My Backyard, you know, YIMBYs. They, I believe, are in favor of it. The Democratic Party as a whole, I believe, is in favor of it. People who are rightfully concerned about social justice issues and people not being able to live in California are afforded. And, you know, it is a short-term solution. In the short term, you know, people say, my rent is too damn high, right? You know, do something about it. Politics responds and they say, okay, let's freeze it. You know, you're paying money to this affluent class. So they are generally in favor. And, you know, at a grassroots level, that's very appealing. And it's hard to actually counteract that, okay, it's going to work now, but think about what's going to happen 5-10 years from now when we put this into place.
Sure. And who's pushing back on it?
Oh, I think the landed interest who want to be able to buy property and then be able to charge whatever they want, developers, the apartment association, realtors, even people who own single family homes now would be subject to rent control. It'll be an interesting process. It's hard to counteract that immediate benefit of freezing people's rents, and people kind of vote their pocketbook and their emotions. It's going to be interesting how this actually progresses. But there probably will be more money coming out against it because there is a lot of money that developers fear, the profits that are going to be taken away from them.
I believe that already is the case. So these are two ballot measures, and housing policy is a lot bigger and more complicated than that. What else do you think needs to happen to help us, you know, move away from this crisis we're in?
I think the main thing we need to do is to build more homes. We need to find a way to build more homes. It's supply and demand. We could try to cut back on the demand, but, you know, that is not a politically acceptable type. You know, discourage people from coming to California. Be excited when people leave California. You know, the price of homes would go down if that was the case. But California is a very attractive place to be. So we just need to build more homes to accommodate those people that are coming. We could look to a place like Texas, you know, which is an anathema to Californians, but they don't have this issue, right? Their rents and their homes are a third less in cost. Right? Because they don't have environmental restrictions. They don't have a requirement to put solar panels on a home, right? They don't have environmental impact reports that have to be filed. Austin is expensive, but they're building homes there, and it's fueling that form of development. So we need to build more homes. We've worked in some ways to have as-of-right zoning, you know, that, okay, we open up a lot, you can build something here, but there are still these subterfuge, you know, with CEQA, the Environmental Quality Act, local governments not being all that excited about doing that. You can point to Elk Grove and their recent issues they had with wanting to build some affordable housing. And, you know, the state now is taking some of these local governments, threatening lawsuits and following up on them. So I think that is the answer, relying upon the market and building more. And, you know, we can't have it all. We have to give up some of our environmental goals, some of this local control, some of the NIMBYs who don't want to build it in their background in the interest of the entire state.
We're just about out of time, so thanks again for joining me, Rob.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here.
That was Sacramento State Public Policy Professor Robert Wassmer speaking with Cap Radio Politics reporter Megan Myskowski about two housing-related ballot measures, Prop 5 and Prop 33. Both will go before California voters this November. Still ahead, a local website is giving context and clarity to wildfire coverage across the region. We'll talk with the founder of The Lookout. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Chris Nichols. We're back in just a moment.